Hello and welcome to the Yes to Life show on UK Health Radio. I'm Robin Daly, host for the show and founder of the UK charity Yes to Life, that's been flying the flag for integrative medicine as the route to better cancer care for over 15 years. Not so many years ago, finding a nutritional therapist with the skills and the experience to support you through cancer was a tough call. There really were very few. I'm delighted to say this situation has changed radically. There are now many of them spread right across the country, and numbers are increasing rapidly with the establishment of cancer-specific training courses. Today I'm talking to Linda Sims from Bristol, one such specifically trained nutritional therapist. She's passionate about supporting those with cancer and about changing attitudes to nutritional science and to food as medicine. I'm talking to Linda over the internet. Hi Linda, a big welcome to the Yes to Life show.
Hi Robin, thank you for having me.
Great, well it's always a delight to host new guests on the show. Today we're going to be talking about the methods that are being studied and that you're using of improving the effectiveness of conventional treatments, of counteracting their shortcomings, of reducing their damaging effects. But first, I'd like to ask you a general question about the state of nutritional science, a quarter of the way nearly into the 21st century. Some years back, a well-known professor and one of the foremost detractors of all forms of natural medicine memorably rebranded nutritional science as Nutribollocks. Back then, it was hard going countering such statements effectively, but how secure do you think his position looks today? Just how scientific is nutritional science?
Well, it's getting there. It's getting there, and we definitely have a lot more science. I would say that there is still a bit of this Nutribollocks from some doctors, from some oncologists, and I do actually see that in my practice. But we now know there is a lot of research out there that we can actually put forward and show that, you know, that there is reasoning and that there is research behind what we recommend.
Right. So things definitely have moved on, haven't they, quite a bit in the last 5 to 10 years. Yeah. Okay, well, look, I want to go into some of that science, but first I'd like to hear a little bit about your background, the story that led to you practicing nutritional therapy in Bristol today.
I would say probably everybody who specialises or who decides to specialise in supporting cancer clients has had a personal story. And my personal story comes from my father-in-law, who was diagnosed with two primary cancers. He had prostate cancer, he had colorectal cancer. Wow. And this is now going back to 18 years. Yeah, he was actually diagnosed when I was pregnant with my son. So, and he's now 18, so you can, so you know sort of the timeline.
Right.
I always say that he is seen as a survivor because he lived with cancer 11 years, but sadly he passed away. And so from my point of view, you know, we lost him. The fact that we can call him survivor from the sort of NHS sort of guidelines that the survival beyond 10 years, you know, that really gives us no comfort.
No.
But I really got into this mode of trying to find things that could help him, you know, diet and sort of supplements. And really that's what sparked my interest in nutrition, and I started to research. And also he went to Penny Brown Centre for some advice.
All right.
This was sort of the last 6 months of his life, sadly. Mm-hmm. But that was when he really looked into making changes. He started having acupuncture, and he did make a few changes to his diet, and I could see sort of the positives of those changes. So that really kind of made me think, you know, this is what I would love to do going forward, really helping people who have been diagnosed with cancer and really give them some guidance how to eat better, how to improve their lifestyle, you know, to give themselves the best chance they can.
Mm-hmm. So what did you do in order to get yourself in that position?
I went to study with the College of Naturopathic Medicine in Bristol. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, I did also additional studies. So, for example, the Ion cancer course, various other courses online. But at the moment, I'm studying with Dr. Nina Fuller-Chevelle, and she just started a wonderful cancer course for nutritional therapists. So I'm studying that. So it's constantly really trying to research and, you know, improve my knowledge. It's an ongoing thing. And I currently also lecture at the College of Naturopathic Medicine here in Bristol.
Right. Okay. Yeah. You write on your website, you're a self-confessed geek. Obviously you are really delighted in this stuff. And you mentioned Nina's course there. We actually had a radio show about that for anybody who hasn't heard it, but who's interested. So do look on the Yes to Life radio show page on yestolife.org.uk and do a little search for Nina and you'll find the show where she tells you all about that course. So that's great. So now down to the main business of the day, nutritional therapy as an adjunct to conventional care, in particular chemotherapy. So I want to dive straight into one of the juiciest topics, one that's attracted the interest of many circles, fasting. Now, fasting sounds in some ways a bit like unnutrition rather than nutrition. But please, can you first tell us what we know about the reasons that fasting seems to have multiple positive effects on the body and broadly what those effects are?
So I would say fasting, you know, not only to be used as sort of adjunct to chemotherapy, but also absolutely amazing sort of preventative tool when it comes to cancer. Right. There's so many positive effects that fasting has on our bodies. There are different types of fasting, and we can touch on those also. But in general, you know, when we talk about chemotherapy, fasting has been shown to improve outcomes. So it really improves the effectiveness of chemotherapy, and has been shown for several types of cancer, but also reduces the side effects. Not all of them, but many of the side effects, and especially side effects such as nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, you know, abdominal cramps, even mucositis and dry mouth. Also, people report for having more energy and less weakness, which seems strange when you're eating less and you have more energy.
Yeah,
but
that's
one of the side effects also.
Yeah.
So improved energy, improved and less weakness. There are different ways of fasting, and I think that's something we need to discuss, because not every type of fasting is really suitable for everyone.
Yeah, right. Okay. Yeah, I'd love to. Just to say that though, it's taken a long time for this information to emerge that actually fasting is good with cancer treatment, and you can see why in a way, because it's sort of totally counterintuitive in many ways, isn't it, to actually take away nutrition when you're heading into a difficult circumstance.
Well, we all know that, you know, all of our clients or cancer patients are told, you know, make sure to keep your weight up during treatment. And of course, that is also important, and we don't want anybody to lose a lot of weight. So that's where we need to really do this in a very controlled way.
Right.
And as I said, not everybody is suited to fasting. So for example, if I've got a client in front of me who has already lost a significant amount of weight, then I will not be recommending fasting.
No, right.
So it's a very individualized approach, but that's what we do with nutritional therapy. It is an individualized approach, and not, you know, there isn't one thing that suits everybody.
Right.
And, you know, and not everybody reacts to fasting positively. You know, there are side effects such as lightheadedness and your blood pressure may fall. So, you know, some of the sort of more adverse effects would be sort of fainting, but a lot of people get on with it very, very well. And because they see, you know, how much better they feel when they fast, how much better they feel sort of post treatments, they do sort of take that on board. When you look at the research, some research is done with water fasts, and that's anywhere from sort of 24 to 72 hours of water fasting.
Okay.
And that is quite hard going. And one research paper, actually, it took them about 5 years to finish this research because not many people got on with these sort of prolonged water fasts.
All right.
So the fast that I really like is, you know, Dr. Walter Longo's sort of fast mimicking diet, fast mimicking fast.
Yes. Right. Now, I want to go into that. Just before we go on to that, could you say anything at all about, I'm fascinated by this fact that the fasting actually improves the chemo. There's two sides to this, aren't there? You've mentioned them both. It has an effect on the actual treatment, but then, of course, it also helps with a lot of the side effects. But sticking with this effect it has on the treatment, is there some kind of theory of the mechanism of how this works?
In a very sort of layman's terms, is as if it readies the cancer cells more to the... basically making them more hungry, you know, in a way. So we have like insulin potentiated chemo, and you've probably heard of that, when it actually sort of makes the chemo more effective at smaller doses, because it kind of opens up those glucose receptors more, making the chemotherapy more sort of ready to enter. So that, I think that's the kind of the easiest way to explain it, that it sort of makes it more available, you know, to the cells, the chemotherapy, sort of more penetrating, right, so less of resistance.
But presumably not, it doesn't do that to your healthy cells, because otherwise you'd be in trouble, wouldn't you?
No, and that's the fantastic thing, that actually the healthy cells are not in any way harmed by this.
Right. Okay, extraordinary. So it actually has the kind of, it discriminates in a way that everybody's always looking for with cancer treatments.
Yeah.
In fact, in the way that chemotherapy doesn't do very well, but this does.
And this is what we see with a lot of natural therapies. You know, we see sort of a positive effect on healthy cells, a negative effect on the cancer cells. And that's really fascinating. You know, also with the fasting, we see sort of increase in natural killer cells,
right,
which are of course the cancer killing cells.
So it's actually,
so that's a positive effect.
Very. So it's actually improving your immune system basically as well.
Yes. And we also see less inflammation, and we know that, you know, cancer tends to grow in inflammatory environment.
Yes.
So actually fasting can also reduce sort of inflammation. We see reduction of those inflammatory cytokines that are produced in response to inflammation. So that's so many positive effects. Also we need to mention the insulin, like growth factor and glucose.
Okay.
Because we know that high levels of insulin, like growth factor, are linked to many cancers, several types of cancers, and some of the most common cancers like colorectal cancer, breast cancer. So with fast mimicking diet, but this fasting, we see actually reduction of insulin like growth factor, and that's a positive also as a preventative.
Yeah, definitely. Amazing. So multiple good effects, really. Okay, well, that's great. Now let's move on to, you've mentioned the fast mimicking diet. What is this?
So fast mimicking diet is a five-day fast, and it's a diet that's been coined by Dr. Walter Longo. We've mentioned him before, who is a longevity expert, and he's using this particular diet not only to support cancer patients, but also cardiovascular disease and diabetes, type 2 diabetes. So there are many effects. So, do you know, it's generally, when you see when something's beneficial for you, it's beneficial for a lot of these non-communicable diseases.
Yes.
So the fast mimicking diet is a 5-day program. The first day you'll eat about 1200 calories, and there's 4 days you are eating about 600-700 calories per day.
Okay.
So you're still eating, which is fantastic. You can still eat, and I think that's why I like using it, because there is still a bit of food. So it's not a complete water fast.
Right.
So you're still eating, and you're getting half of your calories are coming from fat, and half of your calories are coming from from plant carbohydrates, mainly vegetables. Dr. Longo has his own product, and you know the Prolon, which you can buy, the 5-day protocol. But, you know, that there's also a way to do this sort of DIY. And I've done that, you know, I've got a bit of a sort of crib sheet on how to combine these foods together and to achieve sort of the calorie deficit that we need to achieve.
Yeah.
I've done it myself. I wouldn't ask my clients to do something that I haven't tried on myself.
How did you find it?
I've got on really well with it. Mm-hmm. In the first day, it was absolutely fine. You know, the second, third day, I would say a bit of a headache, a bit of lightheadedness, because I was also working at the same time. So that might not have been the best idea. But sort of by the day four and five, I just felt absolutely amazing. Right. Lots of energy. Didn't really feel hungry at all. So it's one of the easier ways in my mind to actually do a fast.
Right.
And Dr. Longo recommends to sort of start a couple of days before you have your chemotherapy administered. So it could be 2 to 3 days, depending on, you know, how long your chemotherapy treatment is. And then not to start eating your sort of proper diet until 24 hours after you finish your chemotherapy treatment.
Right. Most people won't feel like it anyway 24 hours after chemo, will they?
Exactly.
Right. So interesting.
And you can eat a little bit of food. You know, you can eat maybe a nice soup, which is easy on the digestion. So you're still eating something. But as you said, because lots of people don't really feel like eating after chemotherapy. So this is actually makes it quite easy protocol to follow.
Yeah. All right, so this is a calorie limiting diet as opposed to an actual complete fast. And presumably, Dr. Longo is telling us that this is just as good or even better. I don't know. What's the evidence?
Well, he has been researching this quite extensively. And so far, the evidence is pretty convincing. And based on his research, he has also a list of actually chemotherapy drugs that have been researched alongside his fasting.
Right.
So that there are various like 5-fluorosil and docetaxel, carboplatin. You know that. He has actually looked into specific chemotherapy drugs also.
Yeah.
And protective effect of his fast mimicking diet. So he's got a lot of research behind him. And as I said, with this fasting, you know, we see so many positives on the body from the growth hormones and the inflammatory cytokines. But, you know, that those hormones like insulin is lowered and VEGF, which is the vascular endothelial growth factor. So that's associated with formation of new blood vessels. So his research is very, very sound.
Right.
And there are some human trials also going on at the moment. So I think we're going to get more and more evidence behind this.
Right.
The reason why I like it is because I'm not asking somebody to just do a water fast. I'm asking them to just reduce calories, and it's more doable and it's more sort of end user friendly.
Okay, yeah, I appreciate that. And so you feel there's no sacrifice they're making by not doing a water fast then?
You know, if somebody wants to do water fast, absolutely fine. But what I see so from the research, the research is very sound and the results are very similar. And as I said, you get more compliance with it. And I think that's really important.
Definitely. Right. So anyway, you've made a good case for doing it anyway, whether or not you're having chemo. Would that be fair?
Mm-hmm.
It's a great strategy for people with cancer.
Actually, when you look at Dr. Longo's recommendations, he does recommend that people who have chronic conditions, whether it's cardiovascular disease, whether it's cancer, that they should be doing the fast mimicking diet for 5 days once a month or once every 3 months. So it's in a way a reset. And we, as I said, we've already mentioned the insulin. We've mentioned blood glucose, insulin-like growth factor. There are other hormones like leptin, for example. Of course, weight loss. You know, we know that actually obesity and excess weight are now seen as sort of increasing the risk of about 13 different cancers.
Mm.
So that is a large number. So anything that can help you also lose a bit of weight if you have weight to lose is beneficial, with also the added bonus of, you know, blood glucose falling, your insulin, like growth factor falling. So that there's more benefits than just the weight loss. Mm-hmm. Of course, there are various different sort of takes on fasting, and we've seen the 5-2 diet, or so the intermittent fasting. We also have the time restricted feeding. So I would say, it's always good to look at the client in front of you, you know, what is going to suit them.
Okay.
But one thing I have to say that Dr. Longo also says with this fasting, if you are fasting during chemotherapy, you need to make sure that you get back to your sort of pre-fasting weight afterwards. So mm-hmm. really preventing that weight loss.
Right.
So that is really important. Also, we need to have a caveat. So if somebody is diabetic, they're actually insulin dependent diabetes, they should definitely not be fasting. Anybody who's already underweight should not be fasting. I'm also very careful with people who have thyroid issues, because fasting sometimes for them can cause imbalances again. So it needs to be really individualized and guided.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's answered the question I had anyway about how much could this be a DIY piece of self-medication, and you're saying, well, don't, basically, if you've got cancer.
I would say don't. Get some guidance. Right. We just need to make sure that, you know, we're doing it right, not losing too much weight.
Yeah.
But your blood glucose is healthy. I would say get some guidance. And we always say, you know, with nutrition therapy, DIY is not always a good idea. You really want some guidance from an expert or from a professional.
Yeah, well, that's generally the case. So you've mentioned quite a few different kinds of fasting there, briefly. Do you want to just give us a little tour, say what they are? Because, as you say, different things work for different people. And maybe while you're talking about them, also say how their benefits compare with something like fast mimicking diet.
So the 5-2 fasting, we know from Dr. Mosley, that is another way to fast. And you're eating 5 days a week, you are eating your regular calories, and 2 days you are eating 500 calories for females, 600 calories for males. Mm-hmm. So this is actually quite an easy to sustain way to fast. And that's sometimes, you know, if I've got a client who we don't really want to lose a lot of weight, this is what we do. You know, we'll do the 5-2 fast, and maybe they will have the fast day before their chemotherapy. So that's maybe an easier way to do it. You still see the reduction of IGF-1. You still see sort of improved blood glucose and inflammation. That was another thing I should actually mention, you know, C-reactive protein, we also see that falling with fasting. So I find that that's quite a doable way of fasting for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. The other very popular way to fast is the time-restricted eating. So you're eating only within certain hours of the day, and that could be anywhere from 6 hours to 12 hours. It really depends on the sort of time restriction you give yourself. So I would say that 8 hours generally works really, really well. 12 hours for a lot of people is just the way they eat anyway. So I prefer to do sort of 8-hour fast window. And again, you are restricting calories just by shortening your feeding window. So it's sort of less drastic, and maybe in sort of psychologically, you don't really feel you are restricting your calories. You are just restricting eating window. But by that, you know, with doing that, you actually are restricting calories.
Right. And, you know, how much effect will this have compared with, say, a 5-2? Is it similar or?
There is some effect. I mean, these type of fasts are not as well studied as something like the fast mimicking diet.
Okay.
So I would still say that's sort of my really preferred one would be the fast mimicking diet, or even the 5-2 diet is a bit more research. It's when we are sort of playing around with the window, you know, is it 8 hours, is it 12 hours, that the research is not that as, there's not as much research for that. But it's still beneficial, and it's actually beneficial for weight loss also. So when we're talking about prevention, and we're looking at reducing weight as a form of prevention for cancer, then definitely, you know, that can be a really, really good way to lose weight.
Mm. So in the absence of the science, the kind of longer fasting period each day is probably maybe just a good health tip for people generally, rather than for somebody who's got a serious condition.
Yeah, I would say, you know, if you want to use fasting for chemotherapy, that the most researched one is the fast mimicking diet and actually the water fasting. Those are the two that have been sort of used most in research.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and so you know, are you generally advising people, obviously you've got your chosen favorite there, the fast mimicking diet, are you kind of prescribing this, so to speak, in quite a lot of situations for people with cancer? Yeah, obviously you've said you're using it with chemo, but otherwise, do you find yourself thinking it's a good strategy for somebody who's maybe after treatment or whatever?
It is a good strategy, and it's actually a good strategy to if you can, you know, if there's something you can fit into your life, so post treatment, in remission, as a so preventative, definitely that's something I would advise. Not everybody wants to do that, but even if it's once, twice a year, there will be benefits. I don't advise it to all of my clients. I would say it really depends on the client in front of me. Not everybody wants to fast, and not everybody feels well while doing fast during treatment. So it's a very individual approach, you know. Lots of people have read about it and they are quite open to fasting, and they may try different types of fasting to find which sort of form works the best for them during their treatment. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, if somebody's really, really struggling, if they don't want to do sort of more of a longer fast, that even telling them to eat their last meal at 4 o'clock before their treatment next morning can be helpful.
Right.
It's a mini fast. We are, again, restricting the calories a bit. And then I generally say to them, you know, then maybe don't eat after sort of 3-4 hours after your chemotherapy. However, I always advise, you know, bring some snacks with you anyway. It could be a handful of nuts, something, just in case you are feeling very faint, you know, because what we don't want to do is that we don't want to make somebody feel worse.
No.
So it is a very individual thing. I wouldn't say no to anybody, you have to fast. It's whatever works for them.
Right. Okay. So we've been homing in here, particularly in this show, on chemotherapy. But just out of interest, is there any evidence to show that the same techniques help when you're having radiotherapy?
Do you know? I actually don't know with radiotherapy.
Right.
There's lots of research on chemotherapy, but I haven't seen that with radiotherapy. But I think that the difference with radiotherapy is that would be very often it's an everyday treatment. It's a daily treatment. So that wouldn't be quite as easy to implement.
Yeah, I see that. Yeah, it's
different. So, and it's the same, you know, if it's different types of chemotherapy. So you also have to look at what type of chemotherapy your client is having. If they have chemotherapy every 3 weeks, then that is easier to implement. So you've got to look at what type of chemotherapy, because if it's a daily treatment, then of course you don't want to be fasting.
No. Okay, fair enough. So you made a great case for looking into fasting of one kind or another. Could you tell us now about other nutritional approaches you find are the most effective at combating the shortcomings of chemotherapy? And I'd like to start with possibly the most crucial of those shortcomings, and that is cancer's ability to become resistant to treatment, however toxic it is, known as chemo resistance. How can nutrition help here?
Nutrition can help. So the fasting would be great. That's okay. Definitely one tool we have. What I use very often is supplements like berberine, because there's quite a lot of research in berberine and chemo resistance, for example.
Okay.
I use medicinal mushrooms quite a lot to support people through chemotherapy. When they are allowed to take these supplements, because that's not always the case, as you probably know.
Right.
So those are sort of the things I use probably the most. So supplementing during chemotherapy, it's very difficult to supplement, because we know that it's still something that is generally looked down upon by oncology. So it is very difficult, but there are definitely supplements that have been sort of shown to reduce the resistance to chemotherapy, and berberine is definitely one of them. So that's the one I do favor. Mushrooms, sometimes green tea, but that again needs to be done in a way that it's not interacting, because some chemotherapies may interact or are contraindicated with green tea. So it's very individual.
Right. Anyway, very important area. I think, you know, there is a lot of potential there for overcoming some of these issues. I mean,
I think there's lots of research happening at the moment, for various nutraceuticals. But we always have to be careful with nutraceuticals, because as I'm not a medical doctor, you know, then clients come back to me and say, well, the supplements have been recommended, I'm not allowed to take. So then we've got to look at sort of alternative approaches. And for example, you know, with the mushrooms, we can have a look at actually sort of more dried mushrooms rather than extracted mushrooms.
Right.
We're looking at, you know, making sure we're balancing the blood sugar levels. So that's also important.
There's not generally any.
You know what we run. So there are certain obstacles that we. That we have, sadly. But medicinal mushrooms for me is one of the best sort of supplements to use during chemotherapy and during radiotherapy. And you probably know already how well researched actually medicinal mushrooms are, and we've seen sort of improved effectiveness of treatments when medicinal mushrooms are used alongside chemotherapy, radiotherapy. There's even some emerging research with immunotherapy and medicinal mushrooms, particularly maitake mushrooms. So that's something that I generally really love to use. And also we know that there are really hardly any interactions because of the way medicinal mushrooms are detoxified by the body. Japan has been using medicinal mushrooms, in particular PSK from turkey tail, since about 1970s alongside chemotherapies. So that there is a wealth of research and wealth of knowledge when it comes to medicinal mushrooms and improving outcomes and also reducing side effects of treatments.
Yeah, we're taking quite a few decades to catch up on this one, aren't we? There's still not a great deal of interest in such a amazingly huge potential there is in mushrooms, I think. And as you say, they go along beside anything, and they're so amazingly supportive. We seem to have this extraordinary synergy with the world
of fungi. They are incredible. There's like an intelligence about mushrooms, you know, that they actually communicate directly with our immune system.
Right.
And I just find them absolutely fascinating, because they are food. We can use them in a way as food. We detoxify them as food, but they just really have the synergy with our bodies, with our physiology.
Yeah, extraordinary, isn't that? So, as you say, they're kind of a frontline resource, I think, for which nutritionists can introduce into cancer care, which, I mean, it's absolutely tragic that all the science is ignored year after year after year. Why? Well, we don't use mushrooms in the NHS. We use drugs, you know, which is it's just nonsensical, really. But that's how it is.
And I generally send, you know, I send my clients to their doctors with some research on the mushrooms, but I'm not always successful with, you know, doctors agreeing. And there are some oncologists that are quite happy for my clients to use the mushrooms. So it differs, and I think we're slowly starting to get there.
Right.
Yeah. I absolutely love for all of my clients to be able to use mushrooms alongside their treatments.
Yeah. The thing that's extraordinary is that actually mushrooms offer so much to oncologists, I think, in terms of getting their patients to be well during treatment and getting the compliance to their protocols. You know,
exactly.
I can't understand why they wouldn't be interested in that.
Yes, we also, you know, one of the main problems we encounter during chemotherapy is neutropenia, and we can see mushrooms can actually help increase the white blood cell count. So that's another, you know, very amazing benefit that the mushrooms deliver. So actually allowing the cancer patient to go through their treatment without having to have a break, possibly due to neutropenia.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's it. I mean, you know, that is the kind of legendary shortfall of chemotherapy, is that it does in all your white blood cells. I mean, everybody knows that. If they know anything about chemo, they know that. And that people suffer as a result, because we don't want our white blood cells killed. That's bad news. That's just, you know, collateral damage. And so, you know, they've tried all sorts of ways of getting people's blood counts up artificially. But I mean, you know, this is a natural method that actually works incredibly well. Everybody knows it works. The science is rock solid. It does exactly what you need to counter this terrible side effect of chemotherapy.
And it doesn't have side effects.
No.
Most of the time doesn't have side effects.
No.
So you know, to me, it's a no-brainer.
Absolutely.
If we can support our clients with something that not only is effective, but also has minimal side effects, that's a win-win situation.
Yeah, absolutely.
The other things that we can do also for sort of the effectiveness of treatments are hyperthermia. But, you know, that's again something I was so fascinated by, the talk during your last conference about the Swiss oncologist,
yes,
who was discussing the use of hyperthermia during chemotherapy, radiotherapy in Switzerland. I thought that was absolutely fascinating.
It is.
But also hyperbaric oxygen therapy is another another thing we can use, another sort of site therapy we can use. Sadly, a lot of centres at the moment are closed down to COVID, but you know, it's another thing worth exploring.
Definitely, yeah. And we have thanked the world of MS charity for the fact that we actually have quite a lot of these. They don't exist for cancer, but they're there for MS patients, and you can use them quite often if you're a cancer patient. And it's not that expensive.
Yes, we have one down here in Bristol, so that was tell my clients to go to the MS centre to get their hyperbaric oxygen therapy.
Excellent resource. Okay, look, coming back to side effects, well, okay, there are no side effects of mushrooms, but there's plenty of side effects of chemo. And I just wanted to look at the ways that nutrition can play in here and just divide the side effects in two, into the long-term side effects, which are things like damage to organs or actually promoting cancer through the treatment, that kind of thing, and short-term ones, which everybody knows about. So can we talk about the long-term ones first? What does nutrition got to offer for some of these rather drastic long-term effects that can affect people?
Yeah, so I would say that whilst it's very important, you know, to offer nutritional therapy during treatment, but it's as important and maybe even more important post-treatment, because there is a lot of sort of remedial work we have to do.
Mm-hmm.
And toxicity, that's of course one of the things that we really need to address. So detoxifying post-treatment, because, you know, however we look at them, they do come with a lot of sort of toxic side effects and a lot of toxicity. So that's definitely one of the things that we always do. And, you know, running a good blood test to get an idea of what is happening in the body sort of maybe 3-6 months after your chemotherapy is a very good idea. I'd always look at the gut. The gut is absolutely important. Your integrity of your gut lining, you know, making sure that we're looking at the gut microbiota, so repopulating your gut with healthy bacteria. We know how important they are, not only for digestion, but it's just general for your immune system, because of course majority of your immune system, some 70% of your immune system resides in the gut. So really making sure that we are getting that right, healing the gut, because the gut cells are destroyed during chemo. So there are so many things that actually nutrition therapy can offer post-treatment to help to reduce the recurrence of cancer and reduce sort of those, as you call it, those sort of long-term side effects. So I always look at supporting the liver, supporting, you know, the gut, making sure we're repopulating with gut bacteria. We can run stool tests, you know, to see what is actually happening within the gut. So that's, we have lots of tools in nutritional therapy.
Right. And with your specialist training you've had, are you kind of aware of the particular long-term side effects of particular chemos and therefore able to work particularly to protect against those?
Yeah, so for example, neuropathies are very, very common, especially in sort of the platinum-based chemotherapy. So that's something not only we are looking at sort of pre-emptying during chemotherapy, so putting things in place during chemotherapy, but then also sort of long-term sort of support for neuropathies. This is what a mushroom I love to use for neuropathies, the lion's mane mushroom. Right. If you're aware of that one.
Yeah.
So lion's mane mushroom is actually has something called, well, supports something called nerve growth factor. So, and it has been shown to sort of support regeneration, nerve regeneration, which is absolutely fantastic. You know, it's a brilliant, brilliant way to support somebody with neuropathy. And also I use it for the gut support, because it also supports the health of gut lining and also sort of helps to encourage the beneficial bacteria in the gut. So you know, mushroom therapy, it's something that I use very, very often and quite extensively.
Amazing benefits. Is there anything else that will promote nerve growth?
There is also, well, you have to have your B vitamins are really, really important, of course, for the nervous system. So I'll always look at, you know, I run sort of blood tests too to make sure that we're getting all that right.
Okay.
There are a few other things that I use for neuropathy, so like PEA, which is a supplement. Don't ask me to tell you what exactly the name of the compound is.
PEA.
I can't ever pronounce it, but PEA, that's had some really good results with neuropathies.
Right.
So acupuncture, that's something I recommend a lot for neuropathies. You know, my father-in-law, actually, that was one thing that really was helpful to him when he suffered with neuropathy. So that there are lots of things we can use.
Right. I mean, that's incredible, isn't it? Because I haven't heard of too much within conventional medicine that promotes nerve growth. Is there I don't think they've got anything in that way, have they?
No.
It's unique, really, isn't it, to have that?
No.
Yeah. Well, it's really worth noting.
Generally, you know, there are a few recommendations that you hear, but I would say, you know, the nutraceuticals, so natural therapies, can be very effective.
Yeah.
And I've seen some good results with the mushrooms in particular.
Yeah, good old mushrooms, love them.
Mushrooms all the way.
Yeah.
I think everybody who knows me gets so fed up of hearing about mushrooms, because that's something that I'm really, really passionate about.
Me too, and I'm not even a nutritional therapist. Okay,
I've got the whole family taking mushrooms.
I'm not always pushing them on people. Don't worry. On to the short-term side effects, the things that people experience during the treatment or immediately after. There's a lot of them. Everybody knows that the common ones, you know, nausea, pain, neuropathy, fatigue, chemo, brain, all those things. Do you want to just give a quick roundup of where you think you can really help a lot with these common side effects?
Yeah, so that there are so many possible side effects. You know, when we talk about digestive side effects, like, you can have constipation or diarrhea.
Yeah.
So that both sides of the scale.
Right.
So that is a lot we can do nutritionally. But of course, nausea. Nausea is so common, and lots of people struggle with that. that there are sort of like first aids, you know, for these particular side effects. For example, for nausea, you know, things like sucking on ice cubes can be really helpful. But we're also looking at how do we support people who have nausea, sort of nutritionally, or ginger can be really, really helpful. I find zinc is very helpful for low appetite also. That can be very, very helpful. Mm-hmm. It's again something that I will look at every person individually, you know, depending on what particular side effects they have. Often you get dry sore mouth, you know, mucositis. Yes. That's such an uncomfortable horrible side effect. I love olive oil or coconut oil pulling for that. That is absolutely amazing, so anti-inflammatory and soothing. So putting a tablespoon of coconut oil in your mouth and just pulling it through your teeth and holding it in your mouth for a good 10 minutes, that can be very, very, very soothing.
Right. Yeah. Okay. What about, just out of interest, chemo brain? Is that something nutrition can help with in any way?
Chemo brain, that is quite a difficult one, really, isn't it? But I always try to get people really stabilize their blood sugar levels. I think that's really, really important. Supporting the nervous system, you know, looking at the B vitamins there, and actually that this is where some of the like the lion's mane can also be very, very helpful, or even the reishi mushroom can be helpful. It's one of the more difficult ones.
Quite common though, isn't it? A lot of people, you know, for a long time after chemo can suffer from this.
I think it's much easier to support all these things sort of post chemotherapy, because you can you can get a bit more deeper in with sort of supplementing. But I generally look at sort of making sure that we're balancing the blood sugar. That I think that's really important.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, look, we're coming to the end. I think today you've outlined an impressive array of methods to underpin and improve conventional treatments in safe and scientifically informed ways. It ought to appeal to anyone faced with the rigors of chemotherapy treatment, I'd say. To me, I'd say, well, it sounds a lot more like common sense than nutri-bollocks that we were mentioning at the beginning. So do you want to round off by telling us about your website? And I know you have a podcast as well you might like to tell people about.
Yeah, so my website is just simple, Linda Simpson Nutrition. Mm-hmm. We started a podcast with a couple of my colleagues, Deb McLeod and Andrea Burton, and we decided to start a podcast that would really help those who have been diagnosed with cancer, who are undergoing treatments. And we look at interviewing people who have a story to tell. So it could be those who have had cancer diagnosis, or we're looking at interviewing experts. So we had Dr. Fuller Chavelle on our podcast. Mm-hmm. Recently we just interviewed Sarah and Laura from We Get It, which is a charity in Bath that supports it's more of a sort of support group for people who have cancer, and they are running absolutely fantastic campaign at the moment that is encouraging people to get tested, you know, any symptoms, get tested. It's called COVID Kills But Cancer Kills Too. So I think it's a really important message. Mm-hmm. So we are interviewing people who have been diagnosed and have gone through treatment, who are going through treatment. We're looking at interviewing one of our lecturer from a CNM, one of my lecturers.
Okay.
When I was a student, and we are going to be talking about cardiovascular health post treatment, because as you know, chemotherapy can increase your risk of cardiovascular disease. Yeah. So we are going to be looking at how to sort of reduce the risk of that happening.
Right.
So yeah, it's a project of passion, really, and we just want to get the word out there, you know, to show people that there are many things that they can do to help, you know, to support themselves, to optimize their health going through cancer treatments.
Mm-hmm.
And also post treatments, and how to regain their health.
Mm. Very good. So they can get that from your website, presumably.
Yes, they can. They can get it from my website or from my through Facebook. But we are called Cancer Talks. Okay. So if anybody wants to look up Cancer Talks on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, we're there.
Brilliant. Okay. Well, thanks so much for talking to us today. Been a real pleasure to have you on the show.
It was a pleasure being here.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
If you're someone with cancer and you've not already enlisted the help of a nutritional therapist, Linda will have given you some idea of what a fantastic resource one could be in helping tackle some of the many issues you face. Yes to Life is hosting a weekend focusing entirely on nutritional science and cancer on the 27th and the 28th of March. Early bird tickets are on sale now, so just go to the Yes to Life website, that's yestolife.org.uk, and click the button on the big banner right at the top of the homepage. As people have come to expect, the lineup of speakers is exceptional, and the two-day online event will include workshop sessions for you to engage with. Thanks for joining me today. I have another expert guest lined up for you next week, so please listen again to the Yes to Life show here on UK Health Radio. Goodbye.